be seated. Good morning and welcome to the third and final day of the court's October term, which is being held here on the campus of Northern State University. We have a couple of publications available in the lobby if you are so interested. They are free for the taking. The light gray covered booklet has a short biography of each justice and also is a brief synopsis of the 9 oral argument cases we are considering this term. You may wish to review that. And also available is a blue covered book, which has the court's bench picture on the front cover, which gives you a pictorial history of the South Dakota Supreme Court going back all the way to territorial days. And it also contains a brief description of how our appellate system works. The court would like to welcome this morning students from Wilmot High School, the Sunshine Bible Academy, Simmons Middle School, and the Northern State Business Law class. The first case for oral argument this morning is Ryan and Brian Kraus appellants versus the state of South Dakota. For the appellants, we have Mr. Chad Nelson, an attorney from Milbank, and for the state of South Dakota, we have Ms. Kirsten Jasper, an attorney for Assistant Attorney General from Pierre. Mr. Nelson, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. My name is Chad Nelson, and I represent the appellants, Brian and Ryan Kraus. And as this court is aware, each of them had pled guilty to one count of grand theft, class 4 felony, and 4 counts of unlawful use of a computer system, each of those a class 6 felony. Brian and Ryan received identical sentences, 4 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary for the grand theft conviction, and 2 years each in the penitentiary for the 4 counts of the unlawful use of a computer system. And each of the sentences that they received was ordered to be served consecutively for a total of 12 years in the penitentiary.
Now, I realize you represent both clients, but do you see any difference in their misconduct?
I do not, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
I appear today to appeal only the sentences for the unlawful use of a computer system. The Krauses present 3 issues to this court for its consideration this morning. The first is whether or not the 2-year prison sentence for each of the 4 unauthorized use of computer system convictions to be served consecutively was grossly disproportionate and therefore cruel and unusual under the 8th Amendment of our Constitution. The court's review of this issue is de novo. The appellants acknowledge that this court will take an extremely deferential review regarding the sentencing. Generally, a sentence within the statutory maximum will not be disturbed upon appeal. Successful challenges to proportionality of particular sentences will be exceedingly rare. However, our Constitution does afford citizens protection against gross disproportionality because the 8th Amendment reflects our nation's belief in the dignity of every human being and the view that legislative and judicial power to punish criminal conduct, though given high deference, is not absolute.
Why don't you, for the benefit of the audience, briefly review the facts here?
I'm sorry?
For the benefit of the audience, could you briefly review the facts that you make your argument on?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, the facts essentially are that Brian Kraus was employed at Valley Queen Cheese. Ryan Kraus was at a physical therapy business. Both of them had internet technology positions. And essentially what had happened was there had been some old equipment that had been refuse that was going to be discarded by the companies. They took that, sold it on the internet, on eBay specifically, and it sort of grew from there. And eventually they had sold a Xerox toner or two, which then Xerox discovered that they had sold. And that led to the grand theft charges. And during that investigation, it was determined that they had accessed the private financial information of the executives of both companies and had access to that and had shared it between the two of them. So the grand theft was, they had paid back $80,000 in restitution in terms of a cash payment, and they had provided then a pontoon boat and trailer, which the Valley Queen had been storing for them, they provided that then to the victims for approximately $100,000 of restitution.
All right, thank you.
So the courts must reserve the most severe sanctions for the most severe combinations of the offense and the background of the offender, because as Justice Henderson had once indicated, the days of approving a sentence simply because it is within the statutory limits is gone, like sod huts on the prairie. So therefore, we must consider whether the sentence appears to be grossly disproportionate. And as such, the conduct of the defendant, as it relates to the convictions, is being examined along with any relevant past conduct of the appellants. And this examination must be done with the utmost deference to the legislature and the sentencing court. The conduct of Brian and Ryan Krause, as it related to the unauthorized use of a computer system, which I think, as I had said, are the sentences that we are appealing today, consisted of them accessing the private financial information belonging to other individuals, and then they shared it between the two of them. And they acknowledge, as they at sentencing and today, that the information that they accessed was highly sensitive and personal in its nature. But beyond that, I would like to put before the court the conduct involved by looking at what didn't happen in this matter. This information that they did gain access to was not shared with any other person. It was confined to the two Krause brothers. They did not attempt to embarrass anyone with the information. They did not sell the information, nor did they attempt to extort with it. This was a case of what I would liken to essentially cyber window peeping. They pulled back the proverbial curtain, which they clearly should not have done, but then they took a look at the financial information, shared it between the two of them, and then would have discussions about it via Skype chat since they worked for different companies in different areas. But again, I do think this is important. No one else saw that information, and they did not attempt to do anything with that information. Additionally, during the course of the law enforcement investigation, law enforcement was provided a thumb drive that plugs into the USB port by Brian Krause. And this thumb drive contained the Skype conversations between the brothers where they discussed the financial information that they had obtained. And of course, as I had mentioned, they made comments then about this information as well as the account holders. And it was these remarks then that I believe felt the most invasive to the victims. And I think this is a large reason for the anger and hurt that the victims had experienced were the comments that were made as much as any of the actual crime. And so while my clients are ashamed and remorseful for that behavior, they did cooperate immediately with law enforcement when they were initially confronted. They immediately, upon first contact with law enforcement, confessed their crimes. They provided the thumb drive, which actually had the bulk of the damning information used against them. They also gave law enforcement a password for an encrypted Apple laptop computer, then, that law enforcement was able to use in their investigation. And the twins then also took the initiative immediately upon being confronted by law enforcement and enrolled themselves in counseling with Lutheran Social Services. And they stayed in that counseling program until the therapist had determined that their counseling was complete and discharged them. And then finally, in terms of looking at the conduct, they did repay approximately $100,000 in restitution. At the sentencing hearing, I had argued that this was a very rare occurrence, and I was able to provide three instances to the court that had happened in the last couple years, two of them in Coddington, one in Minnehaha. In Coddington County, one individual had stolen $1.2 million, and another one had stolen $147,000. And then at the point when this was done, the research was done and the briefs were written, which was approximately a year later, neither of those individuals had paid back anything at all on their restitution obligation. And then in Minnehaha County, $145,000 was stolen. That individual is making payments of $766 a year, which, if my math is correct, will take approximately 16 years for that victim to be fully made whole from a restitution standpoint. Contrast that to my clients who paid their restitution back on the day that they entered their pleas. The victims then, fortunately, were not left wanting or waiting with regard to restitution. And Brian and Ryan took responsibility in that manner. From the standpoint of examining their conduct, this does help, I believe, demonstrate their remorse in that they were attempting to redress the wrong that they had committed and helps to further promote the notion that they did not pose a significant danger to the public. With respect to the past relevant conduct, we must take an examination of that. And as the pre-sentence investigation report had demonstrated, Brian and Ryan had virtually no criminal conduct. Each of them had had one minor traffic offense apiece. So outside of the conduct that led to these convictions, they indeed did lead law-abiding lives and were self-supporting and employed. Brian was married and supported his wife, and they were contributing, vibrant members of the community. And I do want to address the issue of remorse before this court. The Blair Court tells us that this is an appropriate examination for the sentencing court to take into account when it imposes its sentence. And as evidenced in the pre-sentence report and by Brian and Ryan's remarks at the sentencing hearing, they unequivocally expressed their deep regret and remorse for the actions that they had taken. And I would also suggest that the remorse is expressed in their efforts to make the restitution as timely as they had. Your Honors, should this court determine that the sentence is grossly disproportionate, we need to then take a look at the inter and intra-jurisdictional analysis. And I can tell the court that since 2002, I was only able to find one other conviction for the unauthorized use of a computer system in South Dakota. That conviction occurred in Meade County in 2012. And in that case, the defendant received a suspended imposition of sentence, as well as 30 days in the county jail and work release. Obviously, there was fines and costs and some other conditions, but that was the crux of the sentence that individual received. And of course, I understand that this is an extremely small sample size, but these sentences that the Krauses received and the Meade County individual received couldn't be more on opposite ends of the sentencing spectrum. Where one received a suspended imposition, 30 days in the county jail with work release, the Krauses then received maximum sentences to be served consecutive to each other. The courts must also review the effects of society upon the type of offense that was occurred, and the sentencing court was indeed concerned about the effects of this type of offense upon society, and took the time to make some very explicit and unambiguous remarks in that regard. And part of the effect of the offense was hurt and pain to the victims in this case, the invasion of privacy that they felt. And the Krauses, while that was where the victims felt the most, I think, pain from this crime, that's also where the appellants in this matter felt the most remorse also, recognizing the pain that they had caused. However, there are some mitigating circumstances that can be examined. For example, the victims, thankfully, were not impacted financially for the computer crimes. No money was taken, they were not extorted. Also, the information was not shared with anybody else. It did stay between the two of them. And as I had mentioned, it was a topic of conversation, but that's where it stopped. It did not go any further. And so then this does help to mitigate the effects upon society and the victims. And therefore, it would seem under Bonner that the sentences given for the Class 6 convictions are grossly disproportionate, and I'd ask that this court make that finding. In taking a look at the second issue, whether the sentencing court erred when it cited punishment for the Krauses and also cited deterrence to the public as aggravating factors for deviating from a presumptive probation sentence for counts 2 through 5, instead of citing whether or not the Krauses posed a significant risk to the public. In 2013, the South Dakota legislature enacted Senate Bill 70, a portion of which is embodied in SDCL 22-6-11. And that essentially states, in part, that the sentencing court shall sentence an offender convicted of a Class 5 or 6 felony to a term of probation. It does list certain exceptions. However, the crimes and convictions that we're discussing today are not found in those exceptions. However, it may deviate from that mandate if the court finds aggravating circumstances exist which pose a significant risk to the public. And if the departure is made with aggravating circumstances, then those circumstances shall be stated on the record and included in the dispositional order.
Mr. Nelson, you're not contesting the grand theft charge.
We are not.
If I remember right, that's a Class 4.
It is.
I didn't look it up. That's just from memory. Well, he's going to the penitentiary, and under our Orr case, isn't there a problem in having someone serving a penitentiary term and parole and probation at the same time?
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct.
So and how what's your remedy?
My response is this. First, as you had indicated, they are not appealing that sentence. They recognize that that sentence was just, and I think that goes further to demonstrate remorse and acceptance of responsibility. And so they clearly have that four-year portion in the penitentiary to serve. Now, our argument is, our response, is that the 22-6-11, essentially the spirit and the intent of that, then, was not followed when they received maximum consecutive sentences on what ordinarily would be probation sentences. The idea then is to deal with that in ways other than having them essentially shelved or housed in a prison. And that would be my response to that, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
And so the Krauses are asserting that the spirit and the philosophy then of Senate Bill 70, and specifically 22-6-11, was not followed in this instance. And this is especially so when the sentencing court stated that he did not think that rehabilitation of the Krauses was necessary and that he thought that they had learned their lessons. This essentially demonstrates, Your Honors, that they do not pose a risk to the public, let alone a significant risk, which the legislature had determined was the aggravating factor that needed to be included. The sentencing court did, however, cite two factors in aggravation regarding the Class 6 felonies, and the first was that there was a need to punish the individuals. And the second was that he wanted my clients to be the message senders, deterrents to the public, other individuals that may come along and consider committing such a crime. So my argument today is that the spirit and the mandate of 22-6-11 was not followed when my clients received the sentences that they did without any finding that they posed a significant risk to the public.
Your clients, the positions they were in, did that require any licensing?
I do not believe so, Your Honor.
Okay. So if they got out of prison, they could go back and potentially do it again what they did.
I believe that to be true. They have IT degrees, they are qualified, and I don't think there's any licensing that would prevent them from assuming a similar job.
All right, thank you.
Additionally, Your Honors, this position is strengthened by the fact that the sentencing court imposed a harsher sentence than even the prosecutor had requested. And as outlined in the appellant's brief and the state's attorney, both in the written plea agreement and in his remarks at sentencing, had asked for a total of 10 years for the Krauses to serve. He had asked for that to be on the grand theft charge, and then for the computer crime convictions to be run concurrently to that. And given that the prosecutor's charge is to strive for justice For the victim, society, and the defendant, it would appear that it was not necessary for the sentencing court to go beyond his requested sentence.
You have 2 minutes, counsel.
Thank you.
Counsel, then, in total, your clients received an 8-year sentence.
12 total, Your Honor. 8 years on the computer crimes and then the 4 that we aren't appealing.
And were portions of the sentence suspended?
No. Nothing was suspended. All of it was consecutive, so it would have been 12 years.
Thank you.
In light of their almost complete lack of a criminal history, Your Honors, it just does not seem like 22-6-11, at least in spirit or in philosophy, or its intent, probably was followed. The third issue, then, this morning, is whether or not aggravating factors should be included in the judgment of conviction. They were not, and of course, our position is those aggravating factors need to be that they pose a significant risk to the public, where the sentencing court found essentially the opposite conclusion and made those remarks. In conclusion, Your Honors, I am asking this court to consider these sentences to be grossly disproportionate when these individuals did not have a criminal history and were fully cooperative with law enforcement and expressed genuine, legitimate, and extreme remorse for their actions. And I'm asking this court to determine that the mandates of Senate Bill 70 were not followed when they received maximum consecutive sentences. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Ms. Jasper, you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. As was stated by defense counsel, the Cross brothers pled guilty to one count of grand theft and 4 counts of unlawful use of a computer. They were sentenced to 4 years on the grand theft charge and 2 years for each count of the unlawful use of a computer, which the trial court described as an invasion of privacy, repeatedly described as an invasion of privacy. They are here only appealing the constitutionality of the sentences with regard to the unlawful use of a computer. The facts in this case reflect that the Krauss brothers are twins who led almost identical lives. They obtained their degrees in computer information technologies from Lake Area Technical Institute, then returned to Milbank, where they obtained positions in the area of informational technology with 2 businesses. Brian Krauss was at Valley Queen Cheese, and Ryan Krauss was at Big Stone Therapies. In the course of their IT positions at these 2 employers, they began to take and sell office equipment online on eBay for drastically reduced prices. A total of about $180,000 worth of equipment was taken from these 2 employers. Not only during this almost 2-year period of time were they taking equipment, they were also repeatedly spying on and invading the privacy of Valley Queen Cheese's employees. They accessed, stole, and shared through the use of Skype chat personal and confidential information that they accessed through Valley Queen Cheese's computer systems. The 4 charges that they pled to in this case were represented an example of the different types of ongoing hacking and spying that occurred. Not only were they representative, the charges that were made, the fact that they were charged with the unlawful use of a computer, reflect the actions that they took. Those charges also reflect the cooperation in the investigation and the fact of what they didn't do, the fact that they didn't extort or take money from these individuals. It's what they did that they were charged with. Those 4 counts represent these actions. The first count represented copying and discussing a 2013 payroll statement. That payroll statement contained employee ID numbers, salary, benefits, leave, bonus payments, mailing addresses, and the bank routing numbers and bank account numbers for over 32 salaried employees at Valley Queen Cheese. The second count reflects that they had access to and repeatedly checked the chief financial officer's email account. Through their checking of this email account and reading these emails, they obtained and copied a local businessman's development loan application, which included his Social Security number, his taxpayer ID number, his personal financial statement, and his business's financial statement. The third count represents their access and copying of the CEO's and his wife's personal financial information, their cash assets, their retirement assets, their investments, and their debts. The fourth count represents their access to the CFO's email, as well as the IT administrator's email accounts, where they were able to obtain the login information and passwords to those two individuals' online banking accounts, where they were able then to monitor those banking account actions. This is something that occurred over a period of an almost 2-year period of time. It was an ongoing criminal action. The scope of this crime is represented by the fact in the record that over 270,000 Snapchat message exchanges between those two individuals. This isn't the type of crime that was one and done. As I stated, it was an ongoing criminal activity. When Judge Foley sentenced the defendants to the 2-year sentences for each of the unlawful uses of computer, you could tell where he was frustrated and what crime it was that he was most upset by. He stated, when we get you creepers, we punish you. That's what you are. You are internet creepers. You are no different. You creeped between the two of you, but you invaded privacy. And that's what probably gets me the most upset. Technology doesn't scare me, but what you have done scares the living daylights out of me. It's the invasion of the privacy that tends me to the decision to punish you and sentence you as I will. This court has stated, when it looks at Eighth Amendment challenges to sentences, when it looks for gross disproportionality, that the Eighth Amendment does not require strict proportionality, but only forbids extreme sentences that are grossly disproportionate to the crime. The first portion of the test that this court has applied is to look at the gravity of the offense and the harshness of the penalty. When this court does that comparison, rarely does it lead to the inference of gross disproportionality, and typically its review ends there. It doesn't even get to the second step, which is looking at the other sentences provided on other criminals. That's where this case ends here, when you look at the gravity of the offense and the harshness of the penalty. When you look at the gravity of the offense, you look at the offense's relative position on a spectrum of all criminality. This case was not a violent crime, so it gets lower because of that. But when you look at what happened and what occurred, that creates more criminal responsibility on the spectrum here. This was, while the monetary value with regard to the computer, the sentences they're challenging here, the monetary value is minimal, but it involves very vulnerable financial information, access to over 32 individuals' bank account numbers. Not only that, you look at all of the circumstances of the crime. Here we have a very invasive and a serious offense. And you have a history of over a 2-year period of time essentially monitoring these people's private acts, private purchases, email exchanges, things like that, over a 2-year period of time. Clearly the seriousness of the crime and the length of the crime goes up the spectrum with that. Then you next move to the harshness of the sentence. Here, again, you look at the spectrum of all permitted punishments, from the death penalty on down. In this particular case, where does the punishment in this case lie? It is at the very bottom of permissible punishments for felonies in this state. The maximum that's available and the sentence that they got was 2 years. When you put those two spectrums next to each other, you're on the lower end. There is no showing of gross disproportionality when you compare the gravity of the offense in this particular case with the harshness of the sentence. And the state asserts that this court's analysis of the case ends there and that the sentence should be affirmed. While Mr. Nelson did argue several factors with regard to why there should be mitigating circumstances, those factors fall under a different analysis for when you challenge a sentence, an analysis of an abuse of discretion. That is an issue that was not raised by Mr. Nelson in his brief. He did raise those factors, but he raised it within the context of gross disproportionality and the Eighth Amendment challenge. He never once in his brief ever stated that the court abused its discretion, and the state asserts that he waived any argument then with regard to an abuse of discretion by the trial court in this particular case when sentencing the Krauss brothers to 2 years for each of those four counts of unlawful use of a computer, or in this case, the invasion of privacy, as Judge Foley referred to it as. Moving on to the next issue, which was whether or not the court erred in deviating from sentencing them to presumptive probation.
In fairness, though, to Mr. Nelson, and I don't have the briefs with me up here today, when he drafted his brief, had we authored CHIPS and refined the standard?
You had authored CHIPS, although I think it may have been 4 months. I can't remember. It was months. It had been out for a couple of months by that time.
All right.
But
thank
it had been authored, yes.
All right. Thank you.
Or my recollection has been authored.
All
is
right.
Probably how I should say that, Your Honor. With regard to the presumptive probation and whether statute 22611 applied to this case, as stated by Justice Stevenson earlier, the state is relying on State v. Orr and saying that the presumptive probation was not an available sentence for the Krauss brothers because of their simultaneous sentence in the grand theft charge, which they're not challenging, which was a 4-year penitentiary sentence. And with that, the state argued actually both that because that statute didn't apply, there's no need to remand this case, especially given the nature of the invasion of privacy in this particular instance. If there's no further questions, I will sit down.
Any further questions? The counsel, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Nelson, you have 10 minutes for rebuttal, sir.
Thank you. I just have a couple brief points that I wish to make. And in terms of a proportionality argument or sentence, I just want to point out that the grand theft, the class 4 felony, which does carry a maximum of 10 years in the state penitentiary, the sentencing court sentenced the Krausses to 4 years each. That's a class 4 felony juxtaposed against the computer crimes, which are class 6 felonies. And then the way that those stacked up, they serve 8 years in total for those. So essentially they're serving twice the amount of time on the presumptive non-penitentiary sentences as they are on the actual class 4 felony. And I think that's important in terms of the gross disproportionality. And then just very briefly, state had referenced the CHIPS case. There are some distinguishing factors between the two. In CHIPS, the defendant had actually stolen and used credit cards of the victim, and so there was a financial loss then to the individual, and that individual, I think, had received 5 years for 4 counts of identity theft where the stolen information was actually used. Unlike with the Krauss brothers. And then finally, Your Honors, I just want to mention that while there were approximately $270,000 Skype chat exchanges between the brothers, keep in mind how the technology works, and that this might be a word or two or even a fragment depending on how they shorthand with each other. And clearly not all of those were involving any kind of crime. They are twins. They are extremely close to each other, and they are just in constant communication with each other. And so that isn't necessarily reflective of any wrongdoing or crime. It's just reflection that they are very close twins and very technology savvy and have the ability to do that. Thank you.
Just a point of clarification. Your clients are not seeking to withdraw their guilty pleas, correct?
That is correct.
All you are seeking is a resentence.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Nelson. That will complete this oral argument. We did notice the next argument for 10 o'clock, and we do run by those notices, so we will be in recess until the hour of 10 o'clock.